Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I want to welcome everybody to the show. We've got a few in the chat room, and I've got one caller on the line, Mr. Robert Kaplan, but I'm going to ask that Robert patiently wait for a moment, because what I want to talk about tonight is going to cover a lot of ground, if I'm able to accomplish it, and I want you guys to understand something at the very outset of the program tonight, and really this applies to every program that I do. Everything that I tell you is from memory. So when I do these shows, I don't have a lot of pre-prepared stuff. I know there are a lot of folks out there that do that, and that's just not how I roll, so to speak. There's a lot rattling around in my pea brain, and so from time to time, I may tell you something that is not 100% accurate. Understand that I'm not wanting to mislead you in any way. What I do want to do is encourage you to do your own doggone research. And I'm trying to give you information that will assist you and guide you in what to look for, what to seek out. When I started with Patriot Families some time ago, my intro with Patriot Families was doing a radio show. That's what Hollis really wanted to do. And so I started, you know, the first show was a 30-minute segment, and it was pretty rough. But it didn't take me long to get my legs underneath me, because if there's one thing I can do really well, it's talk. I can talk until you just can't stand to listen anymore, as I'm sure many of you are already aware. That being said, the reason I like to talk is because I've read so many volumes of material. And I began a journey trying to unravel all this information. Because information without any understanding is pretty much useless and worthless. But I went down this journey trying to figure out what is really going on. What is the truth? There's so many conspiracies and rabbit trails out there that we can run down. And we so often get caught up in the weeds, and it just becomes overwhelming. There's too much information. As Alex Jones would say, information overload. And I think that's part of the system. You become so inundated with information, and so much of the information appears to be conflicting information, that you just throw your hands up because there's no way to make sense of it. I've done some shows talking about ancient Egypt and the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Bible, scripture, history. It's all history, folks. It's all history. And it's all recorded history. There are various versions depending on who's writing the history and what agenda they're trying to promote. But the interesting thing about all this history and all these differing ideologies and viewpoints is that if we compile them all together and we start to strip away what's not accurate, we begin to develop a picture of what's really going on. And there are too many coincidences to be coincidence. Now, this is my opinion. And, you know, early on with Patriot Families and doing the radio show, I realized that some of the information I was giving was too much. It was too controversial, and it was too challenging to the people that were listening. It was really threatening their belief structure. And I don't mean their belief structure, their belief in God. I mean their belief in reality, what they perceive reality or the truth to be in the little bubble that they live in. And so I had to scale that back a lot. And I have, over time, tried to bring more and more information to the table as I felt that, you know, the people in the audience were maybe not ready for it, but at least willing to listen with an open mind. Because if we just inundate people with the truth, no matter how much truth is in what you're telling them, if it's too much information, they'll simply close their minds and no one will ever get through to them. People used to ask me, constantly. Give us the answer. Give us the answer. It's like being in school and taking a test that you have not studied for and you're trying to cheat. I can't give you the answer. I cannot bring to your mind, your heart, what the truth really is. All I can do is give you the information so that you can go on the same journey and try to determine for yourself where that truth lies. There is a truth out there, and it is an absolute truth. And I believe that absolute truth is God. And I believe the story in the Bible. I believe that God sent his only son, his only begotten son, as a sacrifice. That's a given. But what gets lost in that story, largely, is that we don't understand the history and the culture of the people during that time in the Bible, throughout the whole Bible, throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. Not only that, we don't understand the culture of the entire world at large that existed during that time, much less the culture of the world that exists today in our time. And so we tend to look at things through rose-colored glasses. And if we think back of all the information and the things that we know, most of that information and most of those beliefs were developed because we either heard them or saw them on television, or we were taught them through school, whether it be Sunday school or a government school or even a private school. And many of it, a lot of it also came through our parents. We learn through hearing and seeing. And so we develop these ideas based on what we know or what we think we know. All of this is important to understand where we're going. What's next? You know, one of the age-old questions in life is, why are we here? Why am I here? What is my purpose? You know, and I'm not here to give you the purpose of the meaning of life. But what I do want to give you is the tools to stop and think, or at least a reason to pause for a moment. You've heard a lot of talk about 9/11. What we hear talk about, you know, the government, the New World Order, the monetary system, the banking system, and inevitably, whether we want to agree or not, inevitably, the conversation always descends into talking about Jews. Now, I don't bring this up to be anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish any more than I would bring up, you know, Abraham Lincoln and the issue of slavery to be racist against people of color. That's not the point. That's not my meaning at all. I know I tease Robert a lot, who's on the line, and I've still got him on mute. I tease him a lot about being Jewish. That's in jest, and it's all in fun, and I certainly hope that I've never said anything that was truly harmful or hurtful to Robert. That's never been my intention. I don't have a poor outlook or thought about people of Jewish descent. I can only go where the evidence takes me. And it's a place that most people will reject, or many will reject. A lot of people believe that Israel today is the Israel of the Bible. And because of that belief, they're defending, I believe, the head of the snake, the very top or pinnacle of the New World Order, if you will, that people believe is invading and trying to take over their lives. And if you do the research and find out who are these people, and I would ask you all, what do you really know about the people that are in control or in charge of the government in Israel today and throughout its history from 1948 until today. What do you know about these people? And I would also ask that we take a look at the war on terror. What do we know about terrorists other than the fact that they're all Muslims, right? Where do the majority of these terrorists come from? Well, if we're to listen to the news and the radio, the mainstream media, what we're led to believe is that all these Muslim whack jobs, right, they all come out of Iran or Syria and now, of course, Egypt. But we've got to ask ourselves some questions. If we actually look at what we actually know, for instance, 9/11, 17 of the 19 alleged hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. Well, Saudi Arabia has been under U.S. control and mentorship since the 1930s. That's not a coincidence. We've got a whole group of bad guys, right, from where? Oh, yeah, Afghanistan. Well, gee, where was the government intervening and funding the very people that were willing to take up arms against the Soviets? Afghanistan. We look at Iraq, the only people that Iraq had bothered in the whole of their history, besides invading Kuwait, and that's a whole other story, was Iran. Let's look at Iran's history. When's the last time the Persian Empire invaded anyone? We get a lot of stories about Iran and how horrible they are. But do we have any empirical evidence? Because I think that's really what we have to look at. Everything that you and I know about Iran, we've heard second, third, fourth hand many times from the very government that none of us trust for much of anything. But we'll believe them when they tell them something that fits our belief structure or that we want to hear. So I think it's important that if we're going to take that journey, we actually have to do some hard study ourselves, and it necessarily involves studying the nation of Israel, the Persian Empire, and all the surrounding areas, the caliphate, the Russians, what their role was. You know, not many people in this chat room, I suspect, know that the former Soviet Union long, long ago, in the late 1600s and early 1700s, were constantly undertaking incursions into Persia or Iran. They wanted control of it. Then there's the idea that it's all about oil. And I'm going to tell you, it's not all about oil. Oil is important. It plays a role. But that's really not the end goal. The end goal is about control. And I think we've established that over the years on the program and several others. And I think most of you guys are wise enough to recognize that. Now that I've rambled on for a good 15 minutes, I'm going to bring Robert up. Mr. Kaplan, how are you, sir?
I'm still suffering from this bug that I'm having, but other than that, I'm hanging in there. But, you got to investigate. You got to do your own research, man. That's what I've been doing since 1974.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I wish you were in the chat room because I would send you the video link. One of the things that kind of started this is, you know, Linda has been with us from the start, and I've watched her progression and understanding increase a lot. And so I sent her some information today, and she sent me back three emails, and each one was progressively more holy crap than the first. The last one that I sent her, it would be a hard time. I think you would probably have a hard time with it, maybe not. But the one I sent her was a video that was recorded at the United Nations in a conference room with about 20 Jewish rabbis, all dressed in black, you know, with their curly locks and their beards. And they had
the bastards, Ron. They're the bastards.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear you say that, Robert, because what they were doing, hold on, let me finish. What they were doing is they were there to meet a foreign dignitary, a foreign head of state. And when the foreign head of state walks into the room, they all line up and begin kissing on either side of the cheek, and the head of state is holding his hands out and expressing, you know, gratitude and friendship. And then they all sit down, and the one rabbi presents this head of state with a trophy. For lack of a better description, it looks like the Stanley Cup. And it's made of silver, pure silver. It's beautiful. And it's engraved. And the rabbi reads aloud the inscription on it. And he said, "This is a token of our appreciation for your work and efforts in exposing the Zionists and for embracing other cultures and showing love towards the Jewish people and tolerance for our religion, Judaism."
Who do you suppose?
Yes, that's true, Doc. It was. Who do you suppose that head of state might have been?
God only knows. Arafat.
No, it was a gentleman named Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Oh, Jesus. Excuse my...
I understand, but now... We have to understand.
Excuse me using Jesus' name when I heard that, but go ahead. But I had to say it anyway.
That's okay, Robert, because I understand. I understand some of the teaching of Judaism, and I don't believe that saying the name Jesus Christ is taking the Lord's name in vain. I don't believe that that's accurate.
You should take it as that I respect Jesus very much.
Absolutely, I understand that. And yes, okay. Moises Hess was one of the Zionists. If we just study Zionism from its outset, and that's one of the things I remember my father getting in trouble because he used the term Zionist, and his wife had a fit because she thought he was denigrating Jews. And there's this misconception between Orthodox, true Torah-believing Jews and Zionism. There's a huge split because
the problem there is, Ron. Just I don't mean to interrupt you, but I gotta settle things with you.
You betcha. Okay. There's not to settle between you and I.
But the thing about it's the same as, you know, fighting the wars in Afghanistan. These two big countries that Bob Beckles described on the news today. He described on the news today as Afghanistan and Iran being two big countries. Now that's a low blow. So God only knows what's going to transpire after his what he said, you know, like the movie. And to me, that was an insult to the whole world. I mean, Bob Beckel was beginning to sound like a neo-conservative today. He was totally against Obama's policies. But the point I'm trying to make is that. These Zionists and these Orthodox Jews—he can't believe who's telling the Jews and who's lying. That's the sad part of the whole situation. You can't believe them. You can't believe them. You just can't believe the Middle East. Period. To me, the Middle East is a thorn in our side. You know, Israel could take care of itself. And don't be so sure. I said this on the show numerous times, and I'm going to say it again. Don't be so sure that Israel can't put a bomb at us either. I'm taking things worth a grain of salt. I just turned 57 today, so it really doesn't matter to me anymore. I live my life wrong. I don't have any grandkids. I don't have any responsibility. The only thing I have the responsibility is to make sure I survive. That's it. That's all I have to have left, you know, in my lifetime. So,
well, you know, I read a report from a guy who was one of the top nuclear chemists in the United States defense team for a very long time. He made the comment that from 1952 until 1997, he had yet to meet one single credible individual within our own programs or from any other foreign country that could even begin to explain the process of militarizing or weaponizing nuclear materials. Much less converting hexafluoride gas into a nuclear weapon, which is infinitely more, as I understand it, infinitely more difficult than, you know, just creating a plutonium bomb, which what Iran is currently doing is enriching uranium and creating the hexafluoride gas.
This gentleman does not believe
that they have the capabilities to do anything with it other than use it for nuclear fuel.
Well, he's sadly mistaken. I hate to say that he is, because I tell you why, Hitler had a great plan. He gassed 6 million Jews. I mean, he was the king of killing Jews. Everybody should applaud the bastard.
Okay? Well, I think Stalin has that that crown.
Hitler was Stalin's student. If you go back in history, Hitler learned everything from Stalin. Okay? So, I mean, he gassed the Jews. He had everything, you know. And now everybody's trying to emulate Hitler and having a gas bomb, but it's going to be terrible if it goes on the streets. Like 9/11, when 9/11 crashed, and you know, Ron, I didn't even know about Tower 7 when you showed me that video. I never even knew Tower 7 existed. That's how stupid I was.
Well, most people don't, and if the evidence doesn't align with their idea or with their belief, then they just reject it. Right, but I mean, that's the majority of people just simply reject something that challenges their understanding. They just reject it.
That broadened my horizon to the whole thing. I asked my friend, my girlfriend Leonie, I said, do you know about a Tower 7 that was blown up the same day? No, where did you hear that?
But I want to revisit for a moment. You know, I understand Hitler was a bad guy, but I can't let you off the hook with saying that he killed more Jewish people than Stalin, because that's not, I don't believe, factually accurate. Stalin killed a lot of Jews, and the Soviets killed a lot of Jews during World War II. They killed a whole bunch of them over in Poland. And, of course, they blamed it on the Nazis, and the Nazis were on trial in Nuremberg And many of them were convicted and put to death for atrocities that were committed by the Soviets, and our own government covered up the facts.
Oh, well, sure. Sure.
So things are not always what they seem on the surface, and I'm not trying to give anybody a pass. I'm not trying to give Hitler a pass any more than I'm trying to give Iran a pass. And I'm also, at the same time, not going to give Israel a pass either.
Israel is Israel. Let me explain something about Israel is going to protect their country to no end. You know, it's amazing the meltdown is all in Egypt and Libya, you know, but nothing's burning in Israel right now.
Well, you know,
that's a good thing.
The Zionists have been fighting to reconstitute the promised land of Israel since 135 AD.
Oh.
And it has nothing to do with their religion. That's part and parcel of the Zionism. That's one of the reasons why the Orthodox Jews reject them, because they don't practice Judaism. They don't necessarily believe in Judaism at all. They have political goals and aspirations, and it has nothing to do with, you know, mainstream Judaism or Judaism at all. And it's just apparent.
But everybody has to do their research on two simple words: biblically. Not only biblically wrong, but politically and geographically. When the two words milk and honey comes out, and everybody goes to the boundaries and see where the land of milk and honey is, that's where all the controversy is. And no one doesn't want to pay attention to that. I brought this on the show numerous of times, and I'll bring it on the show again. No one doesn't want to pay attention to those two simple words. Find what milk is, the land of milk and honey means, number one. I know where it means.
Well, in London.
I know where it is. Okay? It is where Obama wants to change it, give it away on the river? I can't remember. My mind
on the Jordan?
Going. Not the Jordan, but the other river. Tell me the other river.
The Euphrates.
There's one more. Suez Canal. That's the land of milk and honey, and that's what the Israelis don't want to give up. Period. And that's been indoctrinated since Israel, before Israel became a state.
Well, I want to ask some questions. I want to ask some questions about that land of milk and honey and the promised land. And one of the things I would ask is, where is the controversy, or where did the controversy exist let me finish.
Go ahead. But I know where you're headed with this question. Go ahead.
Well, where am I headed?
Why was the controversy? Do you remember the?
That's not where I was going.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, where was the controversy in Israel in the 1600s, or in the 1700s, or in the 1800s, or in 1903? Or 1905, or 1910. Why is there no record of this conflict and controversy in all those years?
I can't answer that question. I don't know.
Okay, so let's go backwards from today, and find out when the controversy arose in earnest, when bloodshed broke out in Israel. Do you know when that occurred?
Refresh my memory.
Well, you would have to go back to a time frame between World War One and World War Two.
Well, the ships.
And a document that was called the Balfour Declaration.
The Balfour Declaration? I didn't hear that.
The Balfour Declaration.
I mean, someone remember that name?
Yeah, the Balfour Declaration was declared during World War One, and it was the
under Wilson, right?
Correct, but Wilson, you know, whether he had any input in it or not, I don't believe that he did. But the British were largely in control of Palestine at that time, or Israel, whichever you prefer. And it wasn't until we had this decision by the British through the Balfour Declaration that they were going to divide Palestine and give control of part of it to the World Zionist Organization, the World Zionist Organization was formed back in the 1850s. And a guy named George Herzl, who was a rabbi, who Marx called the communist rabbi, was one of the progenitors of that, along with the Rothschild family, and a guy named Moises Hess, and a couple of others.
That's my whole point.
So the World Zionist Organization was trying to repopulate the area with Jewish people. The reason that the Orthodox Jews rejected the idea and didn't want to go back to the homeland or the Holy Land or the Promised Land was that they believed wrongly that the Messiah had not come. And they also believed that the destruction of Jerusalem and all of Israel in 70 AD was God's judgment and punishment, and that they were in exile, just as their ancestors were exiled into Babylon. And they believed that to this day they are in exile and cannot and should not try to return to that area until the scripture or the Bible, the Torah, is fulfilled and the Messiah arrives.
Until that day comes.
Right. So they're believing, right, and unfortunately, in my humble opinion, they're believing wrongly, because the Messiah did come. They simply rejected him. And
they want. The thing is, the Rothschilds and the other guys, he stirred up the business. They're just plain bad Jews, and that's why I'm getting a bad rap on the show. I mean, I can.
Well, you're not getting a bad rap. I like to give you a hard time just because. I know, Robert, but I want to make sure that you understand that it's not out of any animosity towards you at all.
The point I'm trying to make is you can't trust anybody in the Middle East, period.
That's
why we shouldn't be there. We should take every, Ron Paul was right, we should take every damn embassy out of the Middle East, not giving me damn dime anymore, and let them rot now, as far as I'm concerned. And they can come and follow my house because of it.
But see, that won't work. That won't work because that's not the agenda.
Well, what if the agenda this is what the agenda is. And if people don't, this is my humble opinion. The Rothschilds, so-called, you know, the rich mosquito Jews, and whoever the George Soros is, is the moral of the story is they're trying to crush Israel and the United States of America, period. And that's the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned.
I happen to believe that, you know, a lot of those names that you're throwing out there, I think that those people, we do a disservice to true Jews by calling those people Jews.
This is the problem.
This is the problem with the Zionist regime, as Ahmadinejad calls them, because they hide behind the name or label Jew. And they do that.
Wow.
They do that on purpose. It's not an accident. And I believe that, you know, Christ called them out when he was in Jerusalem. And John, when he had his vision on the Isle of Patmos, he also called them out. And in his vision, if you read Revelation 3:9, he says, "Indeed, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan who say they are Jews and are not, but lie." I think that's who he's talking about.
Ron, if you have a Jewish mother, and if you had a non-Jewish father, I'd still be a Jew.
Well, I understand that, Robert, but there's more than one way to be a Jew.
I want to hear this one because if you know the answer, I'd like to find it out.
Well,
tell me that one. I want to hear it.
If I decided tomorrow to begin practicing Judaism and going to temple and synagogue and get schooled in the Talmud and the Torah, would I be considered a Jew?
You have to convert. You have to be a true convert.
Okay.
If
I truly converted and I undertook the study of the Torah and I wanted to be, you know, I want to be a rabbi, would I be considered a Jew?
Absolutely.
Okay, but my mother's not Jewish and neither is my father. So there is more than one way to become a Jew. There's a difference, and I think we should recognize that some people are ethnically Jewish, and yet they're not Jews. They don't practice Judaism.
There's one more secret for you to become a Jew. Would you like to know that secret?
Sure.
You would be a true damn Jew if you did this to you, if you did this for me, Ron, Uncle Ron.
Open a bank.
If you got circumcised for me, you would be a true Jew.
Well, see I wouldn't even already done. Not that I need to share more information with everybody.
If you are circumcised, you're a true Jew, buddy.
Well, see, if we go back to the Bible.
I'm sorry, Ron.
In the New Testament, we saw the confrontation between Paul and Peter, because Peter was trying to get the new Christian converts to be circumcised.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And
isn't it amazing that you mentioned Paul and Peter, and then when everybody refers to the government, all they just do is
robbing Peter to pay Paul. Funny how that all works, right?
I think God is giving us a lesson. He's trying to give the universe a true lesson.
Robert, that lesson has been trying to be taught since the beginning, and for whatever reason, we're still, you know, mankind still can't seem to learn that lesson. A few catch on, but the majority don't. They beat their head against it.
No, the moral of the story is it's all about Michael Magic is always right at times, and Michael Magic knows that it's greed. And the moral of the story is, no matter what you do, there's going to be some asshole that's going to ruin your day just because of what you have. If you have more than he has, he's going to be mean to you. That's nature.
Human beings.
And if that's
human beings are always going to be inclined to covet what they don't have. They covet what their neighbor has. You know, that was one of those rules back there. Something about the Ten Commandments, and every day it seems like I hear a different number, 629 statutes, punishments, and judgments. But I think if you go all the way back to the beginning in Genesis, we recognize that there was one rule, one law, one commandment, and they couldn't keep that.
What was that?
So don't eat the fruit.
Well, they couldn't. They couldn't eat it. They had to go for it.
Right. And all of the Bible, throughout the Bible, from the very beginning to the very last page, all you read about, I'm dead serious, all you read about is people, you know, breaking the rules and then coming back and saying, oh gosh, we're sorry, we're going to do so much better this time. And if you'll just give us the law and tell us and give us some people to oversee the law, the Levitical priesthood, then we'll have guidance and teachers and we'll be able to observe the law. And God says, oh, well, you want the law? Well, we'll just lay out the law. And so we have Leviticus. And there wasn't a snowball's chance in Hades that they could keep it. They couldn't keep one law, much less all of them. And what became of the teachers, the priesthood, the Levitical priesthood? They became the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the lawyers and the liars that were leading people astray. And they became the Zionists. It was no longer about God. It was about their own power.
That's the way it is, Ron.
I know it is. You know, you had mentioned something a while back about the Kabbalah. And that's where a lot of this ideology comes from.
Oh, I know it does. That's the Zionist ideology.
They may not be religiously Jewish, but they do have a religion. And it goes back to that story of Hiram Abiff and, you know, the widow's son. You know the story.
But the thing is, Ron, it's a socialistic ideology.
Which is why you know the friendship with Marx is not surprising.
Well, you know, there's a socialistic idea. Either you're not with them. If you're with them, you're okay. If you're against them, they're gonna kill you. That's the bottom line. You know that as good as well as I do.
Absolutely.
You know it as good as well as I see the handwriting on the wall.
Well, we can't challenge the official story. You see, we're not allowed to challenge the official story, and this is why I believe that after studying, I believe that the preterist idea, preterist understanding, is closer to being correct than the futurist doctrine that has been placed in the minds of the majority of Christians. Not saying that those people are bad because they believe something, but it's what they've been taught to believe. You know, when someone hands you a Bible and says, well, this means this, well, this means this, and you go to, church every Sunday or Sunday school, maybe you go two or three times a week, and they're constantly teaching you based on a scenario that you're led to believe that, you know, this is the chain of events, and it works.
But
there's an alternate view out there. There's an alternate understanding. And I happen to believe that it's correct. I don't have all the answers. I can't prove empirically that one is correct and the other is incorrect. But knowing and understanding what I know and having done the research, I have to apply the idea of Occam's razor. The simplest solution is usually the correct one, or the simplest answer.
You know what the simplest answer is?
Yeah, God's in control.
God's in control, but everybody has to keep low profile. that's the moral of the story. We have to keep a low profile.
I think we have to be, I don't know about a low profile, but we have to be careful about, you know, the material that we present. Like I said at the top of the show, some people just are not ready to hear the information, and they'll reject it outright without any consideration at all. And you'll send people running and screaming like their hair is on fire.
But you know, Ron, I can understand why Roseanne Barr is running for president. I can understand what she's doing. And lately, you know, for the past maybe 4 or 5 weeks, I've been watching her reruns, right?
Oh Lord,
now,
I don't know.
I'm an idiot at times. I like the idiot box.
Well, I would have to say that Roseanne Barr is an attempt at an enigma. Okay.
Yeah, I know,
and what I mean by that is a progressive with common sense.
Well, she does have common sense, and the thing is that all her reruns, if you consider for 30 minutes and just look at one of her shows, which I know painfully you could not do because that's not in your karma.
No, that would be like sitting through an entire episode of The View. I just don't or Oprah Winfrey, either one. Check your pick. I couldn't stomach any of the three.
But the moral of the story is her reruns point to the problems of the middle class. I mean, it's just, you know, how many jobs she had, how many layoffs she had, how are they going to make the ends meet, how are they going to make the bills, you know? I mean, it's a simple story. I mean, it's the same, it's a different story, but the same problem that the middle class is going through. I sat that online all day, paying my bills, you know, like a good boy, and, you know, going through, you know, juggling my bank account, how to pay for this and how to pay for that, and seeing how much money I have to spend at the end of the month to buy Leonie and Kathy a burger a couple of times a week.
Sure.
I got
Miss Linda calling in. I'm going to pick her up right quick. Hey, Miss Linda.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine. How are you guys doing? And hi, Robert. I did send Robert the information on that book that I read.
Thank
by
you,
Robert.
Linda.
Robert. Oh, yeah.
I haven't checked my email yet.
Well, anyway, when you have a chance, go to Amazon because you'll learn so much you can't imagine. But to the point when we were talking about that video that was with Ahmadinejad and everything, from all the conversations we've had for the past couple of years on Blog Talk Radio, however long we've been doing these, once you start connecting the dots, and it does take time because it is a lot of information overload, but once you see, when you talk about the Rothschilds or the George Soroses or the Herzls and the Hesses and the Marxists, you start to form the picture, and then when you bring in the preterist idea and then you see what these people are doing and you realize anytime you see the media, you go, oh, my God, I can't believe they're doing this. I mean, Netanyahu's up there drawing a red line. He wants to nuke Iran and put us into war, and I'm like, why are they doing this? It is power and control. It's pure evil, these guys. And these are the upper echelon, man. When you talk about Illuminati and Zionists and the bankers, that's who these people are.
Hey,
Linda. Yes.
I'm going to let you carry it for just a second. I have to sneak out for a potty break.
Okay. All
okay,
right.
I'll be back in a minute.
Okay. So, anyway, it takes a long time, Robert, to do these research, you know.
Oh.
And It does. It's craziness, and I know you've done your portion. I admire you. But
I haven't completed it, Linda. I haven't completed my reason. I mean, I completed it mostly on the show and what y'all have given me, and I've read some different articles. But even before the show, when I came on the show, and when I was following Flip that. Mostly emailing him a lot, you know, and sending him articles that I've read through, two Jewish army colonels are just like keeping the faith, and they're in the realm of the Communist Party, you know that did me in back then, before the bubble hit. And it's just like, you know, I've been doing it on my own, but I wasn't quite sure if I was right or not. And then when I talked to Frank, when I met Frank at the Cane Barber dinner, that was the clincher. I knew I was right. I'm just so.
One of the things I figured out is that everything that comes over that boob tube, I'm telling you, there's a couple things that Glenn has said that I agree with, and one is question with boldness and speak without fear. But what Ron has said, he says, you know, be careful and be discerning, because as we talked about in the top of the chat room, people, they will reject you, they will mock you, they will go crazy because they don't want to see the truth. And, you know, they just have ears, but they won't hear. And, you know, that's fine. You know, I'm like the little guy in the audience watching the stage, and there's auditions going on. I'm just going to keep going. Next. Because you can't waste time. You know, you can't waste time with people who are just going to take out their sword and have you fall on it because they don't agree with you. You know,
I don't know how, you know, the bottom line is, once we lose our, if we lose our freedom of speech, and we won't be able to talk to each other, that's when we know it's really over. You know.
That's why Hildebeest and Ovamit are trying to do these things and, you know, squash our free speech. And both of them are tools in both senses of the word. So, you know, they really are. And you have to start seeing people for what they are and realize who's behind all this mess. You know, when we talk about power and control, that's it. They want absolute control. And the only one who should have that kind of power is God himself. And if we would get out of God's way, we'd be a lot better off. Everything would be so much easier. But, you know, you're not going to get everybody on the same page. So all you can do is put the truth out there and pray that some people get it. I mean, I don't know what else to do. That's why I fight so hard. I go locally. I do whatever. I have to change buttons, because if I go to one group, oh, God, they don't like that person, you know. And I'm not even telling them what I'm doing anymore. I'm just doing it. If I want this I'll phone bank for them. You know?
Yep.
That's what I'm doing. I'm just going, under the radar as best I can. You know?
That's all we can do. I mean, I've gotten into my congressman's face, basically.
Oh, yeah. I got a form letter back from ISA today, because I gave him... couple days ago, I was, you know, having a fit about, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood infiltrating our country, and I said, there will be no Sharia law in this country, you know, and there will be no dimitude. This nonsense is not going to stand. So,
wait a minute, Miss Linda. We've been paying. What do you think this $450 billion to Egypt
it's
is?
Tribute.
What do you think all the money that we've been sending?
Yeah.
And this is one of the things, see, that just doesn't square with the story. The storyline is, right, that we're supposed to be defending Israel because Israel is the Israel of the Bible, and therefore, you know, I'll bless whoever blesses Israel and curse whoever curses Israel. Never mind that God totally annihilated and destroyed Israel in 70 AD. Let's move forward, and we've got to keep this game going. So while we send billions in aid to Israel, we send 3-4 times that amount to Israel's quote-unquote sworn enemies. And I find it less than curious that at this particular time, when, as Glenn Beck would say, the Middle East is on fire, right? And we're at the precipice of attacking yet another Muslim Middle Eastern country, and on the verge of what everyone, it's on their lips. If it's not on their lips, it's on their mind. We're on the edge of what may well turn out to be World War III, that we have a presidential election upcoming where we have a president that's been in the White House that has, I mean, there's no way to deny it unless you're just got your head in the wrong hemisphere, that for all intents and purposes, the man has been put forth as a Muslim while saying he's not. He's gone on the apology tour. He's gone to all these Muslim countries, bowing to the king of Saudi Arabia, so on and so forth. And he's certainly not willing to stand up for Israel. That's been put forth, the ideology, while we've got Mitt Romney, who is the cheerleader for Israel. And what you were talking about, the infiltration of our government by Islamics, okay, by Muslims. Mm-hmm. But what no one's talking about is the infiltration in our government of the other side of this battle, the Israelis, the AIPAC. And so when we really take a closer look, you know, or a broader view, step back and look at the bigger picture, this is like a made-for-TV movie, for God's sakes.
Well, you know, when I saw the video that you showed me, what made me cry was, you know, but it's just horrible what they're doing. And the lies that come across the TV, everybody's, you know, praising Bibi Netanyahu. He's drawn a red line. They're going to throw us into war, whether anyone deserves it or not. It's ridiculous.
And what's the one thing in all of the garbage that gets completely lost on about 99% of the people on both sides? Okay? From the nut job extremists who we've funded, trained, and fomented decades, okay, they don't see us as human.
Right.
And from this side, anybody who is being killed by the Israelis or by our military, well, we don't necessarily see them as human either. And it's the toll of human life and a lot of innocent human life that gets lost in the game, that gets lost in the shuffle. And life becomes so cheap that it just really doesn't even matter.
Well, let's take a look. If you talk about human life being cheap, well, let's take a look at history. That's been going on since after the Garden. And then when you take a look at the, I call them the Illuminati or the Zionists or whatever, they don't see us as human either. Well, we're in great shape. So let us put our trust in the Lord, man, because he's the only one that should be running this show. If we get out of his way, he would.
Well, see, that's why I chose that song that I played in the opening, Muse. If you really listen to the lyrics of that song, you know, the guy that wrote the song is brilliant, because he certainly gets it.
Yeah.
And when he talks about a green belt wrapped around your mind, there's your, you know, your climate movement, the tree huggers, and the red tape to hide the truth. That's your government, right? Whether it's the United Nations or the federal government or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, so the truth gets lost in the morass of distractions and garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ron.
Yeah.
Yes, Robert.
If we're still standing in 2016, I'll buy you another beer and a cigar of Venice. That's all I got to say.
There you go.
But that's all I got to say. We're still standing here in 2016 and still on the radio show, and we haven't gotten kicked off yet. I'll buy everybody on Patriot Family some beer.
Well, you know, I'll take you up on the beer and the cigar down there in Venice.
We'll have to go to our
favorite hangout, and hopefully the bartender with the low cut top is still working.
Yeah, you like that. Well, see, if I was 57 today, I turned 57 today, so that's
happy
2012.
Birthday.
Thank you. So, in 4 years, 70, I'll be 61 in 2016.
Well, we might have to have yours with a geritol chaser at that point. I don't know.
geritol chaser?
Yeah.
I haven't heard geritol chaser in a long time. In fact, I've never tried a geritol chaser. Maybe I should try one for my birthday.
Oh, there you go. That's the geriatric love juice right there, geritol.
Geritol. Does it give you buzz?
I have no earthly idea. I'm not old enough to drink that yet. I think you've got to be 61.
I'm older than that, and I wouldn't. That sounds horrible. I've never tasted it either. It's like booze.
It's like booze for grown-ups. You know, when you're 21, you can drink alcohol. You got to be 61 to drink geritol.
Oh man. Oh yeah, Lord.
So we'll have to wait for 2016 for that one, Robert, because you're just not old enough.
You might get carded. If our free speech, he'll get carded if he's wearing
that towel and tennis shoes. I'll tell you.
No, I think he'll get escorted out if he's wearing that.
If our free speech is still intact in 2016, that means we're still in good shape.
What you got to do, Robert?
I was going to say, Robert, I'll make you a deal. 2016, we'll go to that same bar, downtown Venice.
Yes.
You wear the towel, the cowboy boots, and the yarmulke, and I will, most assuredly, I will wear my kilt.
Okay, that's a deal. But the problem is we got to worry about the Venice police. You know, they don't take too kindly to stunts like you and I have up our sleeve.
And then we can play the Scotsman song on the jukebox while we're there.
Oh my Lord!
Have you heard that song?
No.
It's about a young Scotsman that goes out drinking. And passes out in the bushes, and two young ladies happen by, and they were curious as to whether or not it was true what Scotsmen don't wear under their kilt. And so they lifted the kilt and saw, and so the one girl tied a ribbon around it. And that morning when the guy woke up, you know, and he had to take a whiz, he lifted his kilt, and he admired himself and said, "Lad, I don't know where you've been, but I see you won first prize."
Hey, that's right. I remember that.
That's a cute one. Well, we can't wait for 2016. We gotta have that reunion. I think we're supposed to head to Georgia, aren't we?
That's the last plan I heard. Yes, Georgia up here to Lake Allatoona, if we're still around.
Yeah. 2016, what is that? What it is? 2016 for the reunion?
No, every four years? No, next year.
Next year.
Hopefully 2013.
13. So hopefully no one in Patriot family suffers from trescodecaphobia.
What type of phobia?
Trescodecaphobia. Fear of the number 13. Fear of the number 13.
Ah. Well, that's supposed to be a lucky number, isn't it?
Well, it all depends on your ideology, I suppose.
There's 13, like you made fun of my address, 1311 Cypress.
Yeah. Well, you know, something about the 11 and 1 being the perfect number and the loneliest number, but 1 and 0 is a complete, it's still 1. I don't get into the whole numerology thing, but there is a lot of that in the occult and the mystery religions. 3 is a very important number. 7 is the number of perfection, so on and so forth. I never really understood all of that stuff, but, you know, what was it? 1, 2, 3, 4 adds up to 10, which is still 1. So they don't,
right.
they don't pay attention to those numbers. They see them all as the number 1, except with the exception of the number 3. I mean, it's to me very confusing, but, you know, I'm sure that Pythagoras could clarify that for everyone if you wanted to read and study Pythagoras.
Do you know why the number 10 is so significant in the Jewish religion?
No.
In order for any Jews to pray, besides the rabbi, it takes 10 men to start a service, whether it be a funeral or Rosh Hashanah or a Friday night service. It takes 10 men to start a service. If you don't have 10 men, no service is allowed.
And why is that?
It's the way it is. God wanted 10 men to fill a house before everybody prayed.
Well, and see, that's the question. You can't tease us with a little tidbit of information and not explain the origin of where that comes from.
It's in the Old Testament. You'll find it under Numbers.
Well, come on, you got to help us out here.
I can't remember where it was, but I learned it in who wrote the Bible on the Old Testament. But if you would like me to, next Sunday I will have that answer for you. But it's just a significant number. Okay.
I got you. Sorry, I was correcting my pops. He said, "Why is six? It's 7, 8, 9. That's why 6 is afraid of 7. It's because 7, 8, 9. Crazy little things. I remember having a customer call one time and wanted to talk to the owner, and the owner wasn't there. And he said, "Well, I'll leave you my number." And the number ended in 7819, and I said, "Only 1? And he said, "Pardon?"
Oh, wow. That's a funny joke.
Well, that's just, I mean, you know, I can't help myself. My mind works that way sometimes. And Doc is rolling his eyes. I agree with you, Doc. That's the corny sarcasm of the Golden Clan. I think it's genetic. I really do. It's absolutely genetic.
Oh, I tell you, Ron, I don't know what this. Are you even going to attempt to watch the debate?
I just knew someone would ask me that. Probably not. The odds of me actually turning the television on and watching it are about, you know, 1 in 10 million or so. I mean, I don't know. It's a pretty big number. Probably not. I really don't have any interest in anything either of those two gentlemen have to say on pretty much any topic, because I don't believe either one of them. I think they're going to open their mouths. And, you know, why do you think they've been in rehearsal for a week now? I'm dead serious. They're in rehearsal.
It's unbelievable.
It's not that they have an original thought. They're not going to get up there and espouse their own beliefs and ideology. They're rehearsing what they're going to say and what they're going to discuss. And you know, I'm sorry, but I just think it's a joke.
It's
going
to be one giant diarrhea fest, I'm telling you. It's the truth. Because every time, you know, it just flows out of their mouths like The Exorcist. It's unbelievable.
And it's nothing. It's honest to God, it's nothing more than theater. I mean,
then you're tempted to throw horrible, you know, damaging things to the screen of your beautiful television. It's just turn it off. I mean,
it'd probably be the best thing that happened to you in quite a while if your television got destroyed in the process.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah,
as Michael Magic said, he on one of his shows that he got rid of cable and took everything out. He don't watch TV anymore.
Yeah,
I watch very little. I say that all the time, but it's true. I watch very little television. It's nauseating, most of it.
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
it's pretty crazy.
Even the commercials are nauseating.
I mean, once you've got a reasonably basic understanding of what the game is, you can't turn that crap on without. I mean, it's so patently obvious. It's just like turn
it off. Blatant. Yeah, it is. Guys, I got to run because there's a meeting tonight. But I want to thank you for taking my call, and it was great. And thanks for all the videos and stuff, because I'm sure I'll be catching HE double hockey sticks this evening.
Well,
I
wanted to bring it up because I know. I mean, you know, we got to put forth at least a little bit of teaser, but already I think it's apparent that that you're going to be met with a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
We just have to be very cautious about how we approach the situation. And I didn't want to get, deep into the weeds of it this evening, because in order to really, truly kind of start laying stuff out, I have to put together a timeline so that I'm not just, telling you, look, this means this and this leads to this and so on and so forth. I've got to be able to lay it out in a fashion that people can follow it. They're going to look and they're going to study, research it. But I also want people to understand this is why I say a lot of the things I say. This is my understanding of it.
Yeah.
And, you may not agree with it, but it sure makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, after you start doing your research, exactly, and putting the dots in the timeline, that might be something we could all work on and try to piece that together for a show.
Absolutely, and I think it would be a tremendous show.
Yeah, you guys, I love you, and God bless you, and everybody pray for Bill and Yo and everybody that's involved.
How are they doing when there was the status on Bill's dad?
Yo did call me yesterday, and she's as spunky as ever, but she's still in the hospital. They're trying to figure out how to, get whatever out of her lungs that's in there. So,
gotta
pray for all these people and,
Glad you brought that up, Linda, because I was going to completely forget. Mike from the hot seat left sent me an email earlier, and he was headed to the hospital. His wife is there. She's got high blood pressure. And they may induce her labor tonight. So would appreciate it if everyone would say a little prayer for Mike and his wife and the twins.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Because he's been looking forward to have those munchkins and all. Hope she's okay. Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, and he's very, very protective of her, and I understand that completely. So we just want to say a little prayer for him and the baby. And his wife, and of course Miss Yola and Bill and everybody.
Absolutely.
Everybody out there, but a special one for those folks that are that are kind of ailing right now and their families who are, stressing because of it.
Okay, guys, have
Absolutely.
A great show. I'm gonna go get going here and try to get to the Vista meeting and find out what mayhem they're
Linda.
Yeah, we will, because we're actually endorsing certain people or not endorsing, so it's going to be a wild deal. So thank you guys and God
bless you. All right, everybody, and that was the lovely Miss Linda Sills, and Linda does a show here on Wednesday nights right from the left coast, because she is stuck out in the land of fruits and nuts on the left coast out in California. But she's doing a yeoman's job. She's fighting pretty hard out there and very active in her city council and in her state trying to push against the Agenda 21 programs that are being instituted through various different entities, whether it be non-governmental organizations or through their own, you know, local government, city councils, and that kind of thing. So, oh, wow. Isn't that interesting? No, I was just, I heard my email click, and it's interesting. Martha, who's one of our members, just sent me a link to a book and a website that I actually put on Patriot Families a long time ago, and I've posted in the chat for the show several times, and it's called Islam, the Prophet of Doom, and it's a very interesting read.
Are you there, Rob?
Oh, I'm here. I thought you were getting ready to say
something. I think that Islamic world just wants us to respect their religion. They think that we don't.
Well,
I'm beginning to believe that.
My own personal view is that I think Islam is satanic, for lack of a better term. Regardless of whether, I don't mean the individual people that ascribe to Islam per se. I think there is a group within the group. We can call them the Episcopalians or the Catholics of the religion. Maybe, I don't know, but you know, we always hear on television about the radical Islam versus peaceful Islam. Having read through much of the Quran, it's easy to see why people take a radical view of it, because there's a lot there that is extreme. And I believe that has been used by the Mosquito class to foment these ideologies. And that's why I was talking about at the beginning of the show, or early at the top of the show, if we take an honest look at the perpetrators in much of these activities, we see that these people are predominantly from a couple of nation states who truly are the state sponsors of terrorism, if you will. And many of them get a lot of their funding right here from the good old U.S. of A. government. And, why is it that we have never taken Saudi Arabia to task over their role?
I don't know. I don't know, Ron. That's a good question.
We will demonize Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan and Yemen and Libya and Syria, but we don't mess with Egypt and we don't mess with Saudi Arabia, and that doesn't square with the storyline, with the ideology, the newscasts, and what we're supposed to be believing about, you know, jihad and terrorism.
Well, it boils down to one word: entitlement. I guess they're entitled to the piece of the pie too, whatever pie we have left.
You know, it's like this idea that, you know, the extremists are going to put together another caliphate, and I think that a caliphate within Islam today has about as much chance of success as the Baptists do in converting the Catholics and the Episcopalians. And the Jews. We'll throw the Torah believing Jews in that group too. You're not an Orthodox Torah believing Jew, Robert. You're not. I mean, you know, I just don't think they got a snowball's chance in Hades of accomplishing that.
That's why my family and everybody hates me, because I'm a rebellious. You know what?
Well,
I know what
because
I believe
you eat bacon.
That's because I eat bacon and ham. I might have some pork down there too.
Absolutely.
I mean, I like to taste the good stuff. Yeah. You know? That's where I get so angry, Ron. I just get so angry and so, you know, are they trying to pull a wool over my eyes? Are they trying do they really think I'm Forrest Gump, Ron?
Well, Robert, it goes back to that conversation we were having about circumcision and Paul and Peter. You know, Peter was trying to get the new Christian converts to get circumcised. But circumcision didn't have anything to do with Christianity. That was the old covenant when they were under the law.
I mean, well we had a great debate about the old covenant, too. And, and Passover, let me explain the teachings of Passover.
Okay.
When you have a Seder,
we should at least explain what a Seder is, the Seder meal.
A Seder is the Jewish celebration of reminding everybody how the Jews suffered through slavery and how Moses led them out of the land of Egypt. And that's why we have Seder to commiserate Passover, to remember.
Right.
Am I right? Did I explain that okay?
Right. It's one of the appointed feasts that are appointed under the law, correct?
Right.
Okay. At the appointed time, that was one of the things God told them they needed to do in observance of the law.
Right. So, but what I want to, after the dinner is basically for the kids. You know, opening the door for Elijah so he could bless the home. Number one, drinking the second glass of wine, and then after dinner, there's this Hebrew word called amikofen, which means.
My father will talk to you about that. He says epicomen, but that's yes.
He knows what it is. The amikofen is a gift for the kids. What they do is they hide the amikofen, and it's basically it's basically money for the kids. Of course, the kids are going to go wild for the amikofen. That's the moral of the story. Who's going to find the amikofen, and who's going to get to keep the amikofen? That's the Passover is a story. That's why, I wanted to send you a Seder book up to Indiana, so you can read the whole book, the whole Hadassah. If you read the whole book of Hadassah, that will give you that's another project that you can do, Ron. You can Google that online. It will give you the passages of Passover. That will give you all the teachings.
Now let me ask you something.
Yes.
The Last Supper.
Yes, that was a Passover.
But it was indeed. And that's when my father is explaining the epicomen, or how did you pronounce it?
Amikofen.
The amikofen. And what was Christ hiding, and what did he bring out the amikofen? What was it in the Last Supper?
The Last Supper, he wasn't hiding anything. He knew he was being betrayed by one of his disciples, which is
Judas. Wait a minute. Was he perhaps hiding a piece of unleavened bread?
Yeah, but that was the amikofen. It's always
Thank you. Exactly. So when he brings forth the bread, that's the amikofen. And he said, "This is my body." What is that? It's representative of what? What did you say it was? The amikofen was what? All the kids would go wild because it was what? It was a prize, right?
It was a prize.
There you go. It was a gift.
It was a gift.
See, I think I think that Christians today, but I think throughout the history of Christianity, at least after the first century, so much is lost on us about the Bible, the Old and the New Testament, because we were not raised Jewish. We don't know and understand the Jewish traditions. And
no,
so,
but they still, they still don't understand their own prize. They don't understand their own prize.
That is precisely the point. And I think that, you know, there's a lot, I understand there's a lot that gets lost in translation and transliteration, but I think more importantly, there is a lot of meaning that is not lost. It's simply unknown because we don't study. We were not raised Jewish, and I believe that the whole Bible from beginning to end was directed primarily at one group of people, and that was Israel. Israel, if you look through history, Israel, the Hebrews, the 12 tribes, were the only ones that were brought under the law or subject to the law. The Gentiles weren't subject to it because they had not made a covenant. The Israelites had.
And so I know where you had it wrong.
Right. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying, though?
I know what you're understanding. But the moral of the story is, after Jesus came and became the Christians, so-called Son of God, and then they had laws to abide, but nobody still abided by the Ten Commandments. No one did. Everybody broke them. Even when Christianity became Christianity, everybody broke the Ten Commandments. There hasn't been one commandment that has not been broken.
Absolutely. And I've got someone in the chat room that said that my statement was not true, that Israel and the Moabites formed a union. Well, I understand that, but. And Robert, you would know better than I, under Jewish law, unless I'm misinformed or misunderstanding, anyone who comes into the community and practices Judaism is welcomed as a Jew and is therefore subject to the law, including the servants or the slaves, even if they're not of one of the 12 tribes. They're not descended from Jacob. That matters not. They're supposed to practice Judaism. Is that not correct?
I've never heard that before, but I don't know.
It's in Leviticus. I mean, if we're reading
Leviticus, then it's probably true and correct. I mean, what Leviticus is trying to say is, if I remember my coursework at USF, is that everybody's religion should be respected, no matter whose religion you are. You should respect God in a way, no matter if you're Jewish, if you're Christian, if you're Muslim. You should respect everybody's God. In the way everybody wants to be treated, with respect. And if we can't be treated with respect and treating each other's religions with respect, treat each other with respect, this world will never be peaceful, period.
Well, it never will be. We already know that.
Well, I know that, but that's the bottom line. That's what Leviticus was trying to say.
Well, not only that, but it does lay out the Levitical law, and I think it teaches a lesson that the law is vast, and there is no way humanly possible that anyone can keep the law.
No one can.
Not,
no, one, no,
You're not capable.
Really,
you're just not capable.
I mean, look at everybody in the chat room. Yellow is a smoker. She's getting her lungs cleaned out. I'm a smoker. You're a smoker. And I suffer from whatever I suffer from. So
wouldn't you like to be a smoker, too?
Huh?
I said, wouldn't you like to be a smoker, too?
Yeah, but seriously, we're damaging our bodies with this crap. We shouldn't be doing it, but we still do. You know, I mean, so, either you like yourself or you don't. Because you still smoke. you know what I'm saying? People say you live to be 100. Well, who wants to live to be 100 these days now?
My mother does, actually. For what purpose, I cannot imagine. Because I look around me and think, you know, as much as I love my family and my extended family, I can't wait. I can't wait to get out of here. And I don't mean that in a sense that, you know, I want to get away from all of my family and loved ones because they bring me a lot of joy and it's fantastic. I love them all very much. But at the same time, I realize that this is only a brief moment in time that we're here. And I firmly believe that what comes after this is far superior.
But you know what? The moral of the story that I learned after going through my first course in graduate school, Ron, it brought up my horizon. And the moral of the story is, if you don't have your mind and if you don't have your health, you ain't worth a damn. You're not worth it one iota. If you can't function properly in society, you can't function nowhere. So, you know, the moral of the story is whatever you conquered in life, whatever goals you conquered. I had 10 goals in my lifetime.
Well, just think about this. Hold on. Think about this. I want to back you up just a little bit with what you just said. Think about this. You take care of a young lady named Kathy.
I understand that.
Okay.
And she's my rock. She's
exactly.
My hero.
And that's... But that's kind of backwards of what you were just saying.
But listen to my point. I had 10 goals when I came back into this town. I had 10 goals to complete. I completed 7 of those goals. 3 of them I can't complete. So I did pretty good for myself. I made a 70%. You know? So... I figured, if I die tomorrow, I'll die. At least, I did the impossible. At 55, I got a BA degree. I took care of my parents, and now I'm taking care of them. I don't have to prove to no one.
No, I understand
about,
that, Robert.
I don't have to prove no one did nothing about my validity as a true human being on this earth.
And I don't, I think that's where a lot of us get mired down because we waste a good part of our life trying to prove to everybody else that we are something. You know what I mean? And
the point
I was making with Kathy is what you were saying is that, you know, if you don't have your mind or your health, you're nothing. But if it weren't for Kathy's condition, she would never have been a part of your life.
No, she wouldn't have been a part of my life. And she, you know, Ron, and she's the toughest state case to take care of. And, you know, and Leonie is just thrilled to have me because I help her take care of Kathy. And I straighten her out on a few things. What to do with Kathy? I could not do the lifting that Leonie does. that I could not do. Take him to the bathroom. I could not do the changing. I mean, this girl works 24/7. I mean, this girl doesn't quit, you know? And when I see her work, and, you know, we work our tails off, the both of us. And this is 24, I mean, it's only a 12-hour gig for me, but it's 24/7 for her.
Well, I've got
you know, after the end of the week, I mean, you're basically your mind is fried, your mind is toasted, you're drained, you know, you're worn out because
well, you know, as you know, I had the pleasure of meeting both of the girls, and you're very blessed and fortunate to have them. And
yeah, I do. They take care of me. Not only do I take care of them, they take care of me, and they're my family now. You know, they only, you know, so, I mean, sad to say, you know.
Well, I've got someone in the chat room who is talking about or asking, can we discuss constitutional law as it relates to Hebraic law? And I would encourage him. To absolutely call in. That's a discussion that I would love to have. And he said he's referring to a specific law that was discussed in the Senate March 31st, 1864.
Wow. What was the name of the law, Ron?
Well, I don't know. That's why I was asking him to call in.
Yes.
I don't know if he's referring to the Lieber Code.
Yes.
Or exactly what. So I've asked him to please, you know, call in and explain. You know, let's have the conversation. I'd love to.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that
he'll call in.
This individual will call in. Well, it could be a her. I don't know. I put our call-in number, 646-378-0321. We would very much love to have you call in and give us your insight onto what you're referring to from March 31st, 1864.
Right.
I'm fairly good with numbers, and it seems to me that may be right around the same time frame that the Lieber Code was actually instituted, but I could be wrong on that date. So I don't know if that's what they're referring to or not.
But certainly
an interesting topic.
Should we refer her or him back to the book, Real Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah. You know, that was, that wasn't the first time I'd learned about the Lieber Code, but,
But you were pretty thorough with Abraham Lincoln with the date lines and everything. You went through basically all the dates through that those first weeks. I think it took you about 4 weeks to get through that stuff. You know, that's what it did. That's when everybody had a heart attack after that, basically.
Well, there was a lot of that stuff, you know, that we just didn't know. You know, I certainly didn't know.
Well, 1864, the Civil War was still going on, right?
And I stand corrected because it was April 24th of 1863. I knew it was in that time frame, so that's pretty doggone close, within a year. Oh, the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, there's something I would really love to talk about. Who is it that was emancipated?
I thought it was Aaron Burr, wasn't it?
No, Aaron Burr is the one that shot Alexander Hamilton on an island off of New York in a duel. And who exactly was emancipated? But more importantly than who... where were the people that were supposedly emancipated Where were they residing?
Where were they residing?
Where were they at? Because I can tell you that the Emancipation Proclamation was a proclamation made by President Lincoln to free the slaves. That's what we've learned in school. With the Emancipation Proclamation, Lincoln freed all the slaves. But the truth of the matter is, if you actually go in and read the proclamation and read the law surrounding it, the only ones that were freed were the slaves that were in unoccupied areas of the southern states that were in rebellion against the Union, meaning that those people that were enslaved in Union-controlled areas or northern states, they weren't emancipated at all. And the purpose behind it, we can only surmise, but based on the empirical evidence that is available, there was a calculating agenda behind it. It was very clear that the majority of the men who were capable of fighting were off fighting the war. And so who was left to run the plantations? It was primarily the women. And it is my opinion, and not mine alone, but the opinion of many scholars far smarter than I am in the subject, that the Emancipation Proclamation was an attempt to create a slave revolt or an uprising, plantations, with the idea that, of course, it would be easy for them to overpower the women that were left behind, that were still running the plantations. But those people who were still enslaved in districts and areas that were occupied by the Union forces, they were not emancipated. Now, they could, of course, enlist in the military and go fight the former slave owners. They were all for that. But otherwise, they were still very much enslaved. And none of that, of course, has anything to do with Hebraic law. Just an observation on the Emancipation Proclamation. But I don't know where that's going. Maybe the year of Jubilee? I don't know. I would certainly enjoy more input or feedback or information from the poster in the chat room. Amshatam 9. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I'm just curious. This kind of piqued my interest. I always like to hear other ideas and understandings. But it doesn't seem to be forthcoming rapidly, or at least not rapidly enough for my liking, but then I'm not in control of the keyboard on the other end of the conversation. So, but very interesting. And I know you're familiar with the year of Jubilee. Every how many years? Robert?
I did hear you were talking to me. The year of Jubilee. How many years of Jubilee was?
Yeah, every so many years is the year of Jubilee, where the slaves, your servants, are supposed to be set free. It's every 7 years, isn't it?
I think it might be every 10 years.
I thought it was every 7 years. Every seventh year is the year of Jubilee.
I could be mistaken.
But I also thought that the year of Jubilee, the freeing of the slaves, or the wiping out, so to speak, of the debt, that was only applicable to, as I understand it, again, I could be wrong, but I thought that was only applied to fellow Jews. See, if you had someone who was a servant to you, you were... I'm the master and you're my servant, and many times it was simply because you had become indebted to me. It was.
I understand that, but I want to see something here. Hold on, real quick.
So it was indebted servitude. Right. And so every 7 years, I was to remove you of your obligation and consider it paid.
I understand that, but I think it might be 10 years. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty certain
that it's seven, and I'm pretty certain that even today, we practice that same doctrine with bankruptcy.
What did I do?
It takes 7 years to discharge a bankruptcy, or to discharge the obligation.
You know what? I think you might be correct, Ron.
Well, I'm glad that you agree with me. I'm pretty certain that I am correct. But you know, as in all things, I could be wrong.
I'm trying to get my monitor crashed on me.
Oh no!
Fell on me for some reason.
Well, let's.
And I'm just sitting here trying to get things straight. There's years of jubilee. Let me see something.
Yeah, it says here the jubilee Hebrew year is the year at the end of seven cycles of shimta, sabbatical years, according to biblical regulations.
So what is it, 7 years?
7 years.
Wow.
It's the end of seven cycles.
So in other words, my mother, I was 49 and a half when my mother passed away. So I'm 57, so I guess I hit the jubilee years.
Now see, this says that it actually has to do with the last of seven sabbatical cycles, referred to as the Sabbath. So there's some controversy or debate whether it was the 49th year or the 50th year. So not necessarily 7 years, but seven cycles.
Wow. And that's something. That is pretty significant. That's a significant... I'm glad you brought that up.
Again, something interesting in that I think that many of us don't understand, because we simply... either we're not raised in Jewish tradition, or, you know, we just haven't learned anything about it. I put a link up in the chat to a Wikipedia article on Jubilee. Not that Wikipedia is the greatest source, but,
why is it, though, Ron, that it's, since we're discussing bankruptcy, why is it 7 years?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. I think it has more to do with tradition than anything else.
You think so? Does that mean it takes 7 years to get out? It takes 7 years for a person to get out of debt? Right?
Before they go bankrupt?
Are you there?
And see, now here. Yeah, I'm here. Maybe I'm confusing the two. Judaism's religious texts contain numerous laws governing the ownership and treatment of slaves. Texts that contain such regulations include the Tanakh and the Talmud, the Torah, the original Israelite slavery laws found in the Hebrew Bible bear some resemblance to the 18th century BCE slavery laws of Hammurabi. The regulations changed over time. The Bible contained two sets of laws, one for Canaanite slaves and one more lenient set of laws for Hebrew slaves. So I was correct. And let's see. Do, 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 do. I know there was something in here about freeing the slaves every 7 years. Redeeming Jewish slaves. Yes. So that is redemption. Which is interesting.
It is interesting. I'm having a good time listening to this. It's very significant. I understand the formality of the seven years.
Josephus himself, it talks about Josephus being a first century slave. Yeah, I don't see the actual where it's actually talking about the seven-year period, but there's a lot of stuff to read in there. Again, another very interesting article, but I think a lot of our traditions come from those traditions and laws, and we may not understand the correlation, which is why I was interested in what this gentleman had to say in the chat room about the Emancipation Proclamation and its relationship to Hebraic law. I think that's an awesome topic, an awesome subject, and something that, you know, the discussion of all of us can learn something from it. And I'm somewhat disappointed that he hasn't gone further in explaining what he means. It's real easy for us to miss things because many times we're approaching a certain topic, even though we may not intend to. We oftentimes approach it with an agenda, or we want it to fit a certain belief that we already have.
Well,
so I think that it's, you know, sometimes Jeremiah 34:14, every seventh year each of you must free your Hebrew slaves. Basically, every seventh year each of you must free any fellow Hebrew who has sold himself to you. After he has served you 6 years, you must let him go free.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
That's the law.
That's in Jeremiah 34:14, which, as far as I remember, is in the Old Testament. The King James Version says, at the end of 7 years, let ye go every man his brother, a Hebrew, which hath been sold unto thee. And when he hath served 3 years, thou shalt let him go free from thee. But your fathers hearkened not unto me, neither inclined their ear.
I'm glad I called in tonight. And I'm glad that guy brought up the Emancipation and Proclamation. you saw me a lot of mental anguish, Ron Golden.
So the seven-year jubilee was particularly dealing with fellow Hebrews who had sold themselves into servitude, indentured servitude, as it was called, or bondage, or whatever you want to call it. So, see, that's the whole point of the program, I hope, is that, we all can learn new things that we might not have known, or remember things that we might have known long ago and had long since forgotten them. Robert, I've got about 60 seconds left. Thank you for calling in. God bless you. I hope you get feeling better. We hope
thank
that
you,
Ms.
Sir.
Yola, we want her to get feeling well, and certainly say a prayer for you guys and for Mr. Bill Strong and his family, and also for Mike and his wife and the two twins soon to be. We want to send a prayer out for them and for all the folks out there that are suffering and ailing in one way or another. We just ask that, you know, God would hold them in his hands, in his arms, and let them know that he's there, and maybe whisper in their ear, put a little protection around them. And I pray that each and every one of you guys has taken something away from the show tonight, and that we'll continue this conversation next week. And we'll continue looking and searching and trying to figure out what it's all about. And thank you for calling in, and God bless you, sir.
God bless you too, Ron. Hang in there. That was a good show. as always.
Want to thank everybody that's listening. I appreciate the support and tuning in to the shows, and I hope you'll come back. And Ash, I hope you'll come in and maybe call in next time, and let's have a discussion. I would really enjoy that. Guys, God bless. Have a great night, and we'll see you all back here tomorrow night for Patriot Family Chat. God bless.